You know, all this, like, talk about, I feel like, just, like, some childhood psychology, like, a little bit that we've done on here, and then also I've been listening to a bunch of other podcasts, like, about, like, kids and, like, raising kids and the psychology of children. I'm, like, very on one about it right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. But I feel like it's giving me, like, a lot of empathy for children.
I also have increased. Yes, yes. And especially since we did the episode on attachment theory, my empathy toward children that are, like, freaking out in public has skyrocketed.
I'm like, listen, their needs are not being met. I don't know what kind of home they're in. I don't know what the situation is.
They're uncomfortable, and they don't understand that maybe the discomfort is over. They just can't regulate.
They can't self-regulate, and if nobody tells them, I know.
Maybe we should go up to them and tell them as a stranger.
And I think that seems wrong.
Just a comforting stranger. I'll wear a cloak.
Oh, God. Cult member. No, but really, it's, like, making me more empathetic towards children than adults, which, like, at first, then I felt bad about, but then I was like,
no.
Oh, I probably should, though, because, like, kids are helpless. Like,
they've had less time to become shitty individuals. They're more a product of what's going on for them.
Yeah. It's just, I feel conflicted, like, there have been some holiday ASPCA commercials about, like, dogs and cats in the shelter. Mm. And then I get, like, a little misty and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than, like, people? But, like, it's not a...
It's not a contest.
It's not a contest. It doesn't have to be either or. I don't know. I'm just really feeling for kids right now, you know?
Me too. And I had a very feeling for kid moment the other night at work.
Okay.
There is a table that they come in maybe, like, once a month. So I've seen them a handful of times. Okay. And
regular-ish.
And it's a mom and, like, her 6-year-old son, and he is hilarious and I really like him. And she's fine. Aww. But but he always asks us for a water, and his mom on multiple occasions has been like, maybe you can have a water on the side, but you need to get a milk or a juice or a lemonade.
And
And I'm just standing there, like, biting my tongue, and I'm like, okay, like, definitely a water on the side.
Oh, like little dehydrated BB.
I know. And because it's happened more than once, we're all like, fuck, we need to, like, hydrate this kid when he's here. So,
and also because that's, like, your platform. Like,
it's my personal platform. Right. So whenever I get some hands-on in the field experience to hydrate youths,
oh, God.
You know, I'm all over it.
To hydrate youths.
But when they left, he picked up his little plastic cup and was taking it with him, and they were like, 2 swallows of water at the bottom, and I saw him leaving, and I was like, hey man, do you want me to fill your water before you go? And he was like, shook his head, and so I filled up his little pint and sent him home with
little pint
one more ration of water. But his mom gets a Riesling topped off with Sprite, which I would not make for anyone else, but it was such a struggle to find her a drink that was, like, sweet enough or that she liked. And so, like, now when she comes in...
What is she trying to consume? Just, like, a hillbilly, like, wine spritzer?
100%. Yes, ew. 100%.
How would you not order that? Like, if I were in a restaurant and I was like, I'd like a Riesling topped with Sprite, I would feel a great deal of shame.
I already feel a little shame ordering a Riesling sometimes.
In fact, it depends on if it's from Germany or not. Like, very dry and German here for... But, like, otherwise, like, if people are like, do you want a Riesling? I'm like, a Riesling?
Just some gross. Light hillbilly wine.
I will say, it's funny. I was actually having a Riesling conversation, and this is totally an aside with a friend. But I got put on to a German Riesling at, like, a restaurant because I was out with my friend, and we were like, we want something really dry and white. And the bartender was like, oh, we've got this Riesling. And he and I looked at each other and went, a Riesling? And he goes, it's not what you think. He goes, if you don't like it, you don't. And then we were like, oh, we're obsessed with this. Because all right. It's like... Like, mouth-puckeringly dry. Hmm. But I was scared when it was initially suggested to me. And the thought of putting Sprite into, like, Riesling, I don't know. It's like, or like Moscato, or like, I got questions.
I know. Well, it feels like a kind of like a 15-year-old's solution to, like, just finding alcohol.
Yeah, actually, and that's another sidebar, but I thought this was one of the best, like, drinking tips given to a youth that I've ever heard, and it was passed on to me by my brother-in-law's uncle at Thanksgiving. They were somewhere, I think they were in Canada or something, when he was younger, and, like, I don't know what the drinking ages were, but whatever it was, like, he could drink.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents were getting something, and he goes, well, is it okay if I do whatever? And his dad said, as long as you, like, get like a boozy drink. And the reason, and listen to that though. So this is, he was like, so I was drinking like martinis. He goes, but the reason my dad was like, if you're going to drink, you have to drink something like that, is he goes, if you're drinking like something that's like sugary and you can't taste the alcohol, you don't have like a concept. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's actually great advice, because when you are younger and you drink something that the alcohol flavor is masked, mm-hmm. like you're drinking like Long Islands or like vodka somewhere, it's how you're immediately like a young blood and like wasted with no concept of how it happened.
Yes, this is me drinking like, Long Islands in college, just on the floor.
So I just think we should make 18-year-olds drink exclusively Sazeracs, and that's all I'm going to say about
that. That's a great idea. I'll start making old fashions for my brother, and we'll see what happens. He probably end up liking them. This is my platform. But that's fine. That's fine if he likes them. Yeah.
Exactly. It's fine. This is our platform.
On that note of our platform?
On that note of our platform, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
We can't afford to be third wave about that, so whatever.
Jamie is like ready to do just like late night phone sex ads, and honestly, like, here for it.
That's good. You gaslight the teacher. Okay.
Who's participating in this study that's like, here, for like the $30, I like came in this cup so 30 different women could taste it? I'm like, who's that guy?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
This is what I want, because I assume these people get to have deep chats all the time together because they go to youth group. And I was like, I just want someone to talk to me, and I was just like...
Anal insertions aside.
I do believe in fairies. I do.
Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast in which we dissect part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, how teenagers should drink, and just anything else we happen to be noodling on. Also, our apparent like desire to protect children, their hydration levels, and prevent their moms from ordering toxic cocktails. I feel like that's also part of our platform now, or at least today.
It is.
Who's to say?
Oh my God.
But gosh, like, this is kind of a fun and exciting episode because, y'all, we are wrapping season 3.
And 2019.
And 2019, which, like, honestly, like, thank God.
Thank God.
I'm over this year. I feel like I said that last year. I feel like I've said that too many recent years.
Every December.
I won't say it the December that we're going to inaugurate somebody new in office. So we'll see. Whenever that happens. Hopefully soon.
I don't want to speak too soon, yeah.
Well, it's going to happen at some point based on a 2-term limit regardless.
There have been exceptions before.
We're not overturning it now, though. And the exceptions before were before that was a rule.
Mm.
Originally, it was just a precedent.
Oh.
The reason that people only served 2 terms was because everybody thought George Washington, like, of all the other founders and, like, first presidents, thought he was, like, the gold standard. Mm. And so they did it just because he did it, not because it was a law yet.
Okay, okay. And maybe just it's more the ideology. Like, Thomas Jefferson said that, like, there should be a violent overthrow of the government every 7 years to preserve democracy so that it doesn't get, like, too systemic. But
I
so
mean,
ideologies,
the man had some
but not
merit
laws.
There, though.
Anyway,
not here to promote violence or listen. Anyway.
Or corruption of minors. Although it does, from the last few episodes, sound like I am giving youths both alcohol and drugs, but I'm actually not doing either of those things.
Oh, the caffeinated mints. Yeah, yes. Those weren't drugs.
And I was also a youth. It's fine.
Yeah, that was just some grade school bullshit.
It was indeed.
But I'm open to the corruption of youths in like a healthy
in a knowledge seeking kind of way.
Yeah.
Giving them an apple, if you will.
I would love to give everyone an apple. Okay. An apple day.
But we should probably introduce each other real quick just so everyone's familiar.
With reckless abandon and just wrapping a third season, it's like we don't even know how we do the show.
That's okay.
That not giving drugs to children is Jamie Ryan in Cincinnati.
And just rolling through the open, that's Austin Williams in Chicago.
I do take full responsibility.
It's usually me, though. We've switched bodies again, and it's fine. It's fine.
We are on that kind of... unique, and now we're saying it so much it probably doesn't seem unique to you because we've said it too much, dear listener, that we're doing like a unique AM afternoonish weekend recording.
Different energy.
So, Yeah, different energy. It does make me want to just, like, talk nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, what nonsense are we actually here to talk about today, this morning, good evening, good night, good day, whenever?
On this episode, season 3 finale, we will be discussing the Kiersey temperaments / temperament sorter.
I mean, truly, I can't wait.
Yeah, and it's been a minute since we've done, like, kind of a personality deal.
I love these.
Yeah, and it kind of interlocks with other ones that we've talked about, so that's fun. And I like when knowledge builds upon other knowledge, you know?
Same, same.
So moving on from us caring for the youths via hydration, I'd like to read you just the Wikipedia of the Kiersey temperament sorter to lay some groundwork.
Love groundwork being laid. Go for it.
So Wikipedia tells us that the Kiersey temperament sorter, the KTS, is a self-assessed personality questionnaire designed to help people better understand themselves and others. It was first introduced in the book Please Understand Me.
Dramatic outcry.
That was written by David Kiersey, who developed the temperament sorter. So he really
wanted to be understood.
He wanted to be understood. He wanted us to understand each other. So the Kiersey temperament sorter is one of the most widely used personality assessments in the whole world.
Okay.
A lot of corporations favor it over other systems. Bank of America, Allstate, U.S. Air Force, Coca-Cola, AT&T. It's a very, like, corporate model, apparently, which I was kind of surprised by. I thought it was maybe, like, a little too feely. I thought, like, a strengths finder or something would be what they go for, but no, they like this one.
Okay, that's interesting.
So in the Kiersey temperament sorter, there is a questionnaire online, and if you would like to take it before listening to the rest of the episode, you could push pause right now and go to Kiersey.com, KEIRSEY. And on the main page, there's like a round button to take the test. It's free. It only takes a couple minutes. And then you could, like, listen through and know what your result was.
Yeah, this is a quick one. I think they quote you 10 to 15 minutes. And I truly just did it on like one quick train ride.
Yeah. One quick train ride, no pee break or anything.
That's correct.
Sometimes, yeah. Like Enneagram, I have to, like, take a nap and then resume. Anyway, so the four temperaments, when you take this quiz, it spits out that you are either the artisan, the guardian, the rational, or the idealist.
To your touchy-feely point, these are all very positive, and I do kind of get the reason maybe why you would use something like this in a workplace, because it could feel polarizing if you use something where, like, certain personalities seemed like a little bit more negative or, like, binary.
1,000%.
This is a little flowery in a way that I think does make everyone feel good about themselves, which I don't think is bad.
No, I don't either. And everyone
serves a purpose.
It does serve a purpose. And the way that Kiersey lays out the four temperaments and how they relate to each other, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but everyone has, like, something in common with most of the other types.
That's a great way to describe it, because I think that's true of people.
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So before we move on, what are our types? You took this quiz, yes?
I did take this quiz.
Can I guess what you are?
I was going to ask if you wanted to
guess. And then you have to guess what I am.
Oh, no, but I don't know anything about them. I just know my own answer.
Oh, okay, never mind. I think that you are the artisan.
No, that's not what I got.
What? Are you the idealist?
Yeah, that's what I got.
All right, okay. Me too.
Well, see, I truly don't know anything really about these types. I'm here to be the voice for the novice and ask all the hard-hitting questions. So, wait, you also got idealist?
Yes. And I am not surprised that I got that. But I am actually so happy that you tested as the idealist as well, because I full thought you were going to be the artisan for, like, Myers-Briggs reasons.
Okay. Which is interesting, though, because listen, if you are into Myers-Briggs, we have an earlier episode on it, and there's a lot to play there, but we are only one letter off from each other in Myers-Briggs sense, but that does, like, change a lot of functionality and, like, what sits where.
Yeah, like, we have three letters in common, but, like, only one function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But there is a lot of overlap between Kiersey and Myers-Briggs. And David Kiersey, when he was creating his system, built upon, like, the work of Carl Jung and Isabel Myers-Briggs and her mother. And
yeah,
so,
beautiful.
Yeah, he was very aware of those things. And there's a lot of writing about comparing the two systems, how they interact, how they influence each other. So more material is available on that if you'd like to know. But...
Yeah, and if you want context for apparently two idealists talking about this,
yeah.
I am an ESFP and Jamie is an ENFP, right?
And that, yes, that's what I was going to say, is everything that I read about comparing the two systems called ESFPs, which is what you are, called you guys artisans and called me idealist. So I expected you to test that way. But when we read the descriptions of them, why don't you tell me how you feel about artisan? Let's start with that one. Because
yeah, I'm down to see how I identify with both of these. So
because, yeah, looking at the actual definitions, I was like, oh, maybe she won't test this way.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so what is an artisan? A little overview. Artisan keywords: optimistic, daring, adaptable, excited, impulsive, enticing, playful, tactical, persuasive. So... this is probably a fun
person. I agree with some of these pretty hard, and like adaptable being like a really key word, I think, for me.
Absolutely, you are very adaptable. They make creative playmates, creative parents, and good troubleshooting leaders. They are excitable. They trust their impulses. Kind of a fly-by seat of your pants individual.
Checks out.
Yeah. Want to make a splash. They seek a lot of stimulation, food, music, kind of live experiences. And they often dream greatly of mastering action skills or hand skills. So that's probably like craftsmanship or like... sports or something physical,
or just like the pottery class I'm taking in January, who's to say.
Yeah Or even people who like really like working on cars or something kind of more mechanical.
Great example.
Yeah
Or it playing an instrument, I think, would fall into that. That's very hands and tactile.
Yes, a lot of artisans are musicians or cool. Artists. Yes. So then let's go ahead and read the idealist, because that's what you and I both are. And you can tell me if you do maybe identify with this one harder, because you might.
Okay.
Idealists are imaginative, intuitive, relational, romantic, kind-hearted, sensitive, authentic, empathetic, and diplomatic.
I mean... these words resonate with me too, like sensitive being one that I think like reigns supreme for me. I also think being relational. Mm-hmm. I think if anybody listens to me talk about anything, like that's in a way like the most important and most stressful part of my life.
Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like you might kind of be halfway between artisan and idealist, and I think that I might be kind of halfway between idealist and rational. And when we...
I was gonna guess if there was something for you, I like knowing really nothing about them, but just knowing the words and knowing your Myers-Briggs type, now that you're saying that, would guess like idealist but also rational. Also, that's a kind of an Aquarius thing, if you want to sit in astrology too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, that's a great point. I'm always love to hear about my alien Aquarius nature. Anyway, we'll get into more of why I think that and how I see these things, and other people see these things too, as a sliding scale.
Cool.
But just to wrap up the types, as so that to get a handle on them.
Idealists, tell me more about this.
Idealists are enthusiastic. They trust their intuition, yearn for romance. They're very into like soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so
and they dream of attaining wisdom.
Again, that is this podcast.
Yes,
so.
They are also inspirational leaders. Remember when I briefly, after like political bullshit happening, was like, should I run for mayor?
Oh yeah, I do remember that.
That was a fleeting thought.
I've said it before. I'm like, I wouldn't even fucking run for school board.
No,
like, I'm
me
not
either.
The face anyone wants, but...
yeah, I don't want anyone digging that much on me.
I don't know if I fancy myself, but that's a part where I think, like, the, like, leadership-y parts of, like, in an idealist, and then also, like, an ENFP, which is your Myers-Briggs type, I don't super identify with.
Totally. And I think... I probably do identify with those parts, but then some of like the intense community elements of being an idealist or
that I identify with
ENFP, I identify with less, and I feel like I identify with more like rational things.
Sure.
But yeah, so split. So let's hear about the rationals.
Yeah, I was going to say rationalist next then, please.
They are ingenious. Calm. No. I am not calm, so.
I'm not calm either. Are you fucking kidding? Jesus.
Innovative, logical, curious, independent, pragmatic, strategic, systemic. I am some of these things.
I think that you are strategic, and I think that you can be pragmatic.
Yes, can be, unless I'm in an avoidant funk, which is about 50% of the time.
Well, we all have to remember, and it's one of my favorite things about some of these type systems, and I apply it to everything, that it's like, okay, let's say you're this type of person. Well, there's a version to be your best self that way and your shittiest self that way. And I would assume that that's going to extend to Kiersey temperaments, too, is like, they're like, okay, here's an idealist. There are ways that they can do that really positively and ways that they can do that really negatively.
Yeah, and I think for idealists especially, and maybe I just think this because I am one, but there are a lot of pitfalls in kind of like the creative idealism that an idealist would have. Like, it can be very disappointing to be an idealist because I feel like I'm constantly dreaming about like how systems or things could be like so much better for everyone, or like more efficient, or like I have, I don't know, hopes for like my life or humanity that just like won't ever come true, but that's okay.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, don't get Jamie on one just about how we should have a 13-month calendar. Like, that's, it would change her world. But all of that said, I actually think maybe that makes me feel, when I first heard us being the same, I was like, wait, come again? But there's something to that with idealists that I would say, I think we're both incredibly imaginative, but we use our daydream, like, spiral is, like, about different things.
Yes, it is.
And I think mine is, like, about relationships and, like, interpersonal things, and some of yours are more, like, independent endeavors.
Yeah, or they're, like, what if nipples could, like, come out of your body, sort of like when a dog gets, like, a red rocket, but then, like, also be prehensile, like an elephant trunk, and I'll spend, like, a lot of time then thinking about like how shirts would be different, like what juggling would be like, all kinds of stuff.
I mean, you sent me a sketch the other day and we're just like, what if her butt cheeks were like vertical instead of horizontal? And I was like, oh, I mean,
yeah,
it would be a very different feeling.
It would be. And I walking would be different, everything would be anyway, this is the kind of stuff that I daydream about. Yeah, it's not always about humanity. It's often just about, like, what if this crazy thing? Anyway, so the rationalists, they are also curious and creative, but maybe less so. Rationals tend to be skeptical, self-contained, focused on problem solving and systems analysis.
This feels to me like I could see how you would touch this.
Yeah, maybe I just touch it. They are even-tempered, which I am not. They trust logic. Yearn for achievement, prize, technology. Not like technology as a prize, but like they like technology. They value it.
Yes.
And they dream of understanding how the world works. And that part,
that's you. I'm
in line with. Yes. This isn't all about me. So sorry, if you're irrational and you're listening to this, like, good for you. A lot of these things are great.
Listen, we can only talk about what we know. And sometimes that's ourselves.
And sometimes that is ourselves. But hey, hit us up and tell us about you because we do want to know.
That's true.
Anyway, I like rationals mostly. They can be tough to work with sometimes, I think, because they tend to value an end goal over interpersonal dynamics. And so sometimes, like, in a work environment, or even, like, if you're throwing a party with your friends and, like, someone who is irrational is in charge of that, like, it might be a really efficient party plan and it might go off really well, but, like, there might be a few people who had their feelings hurt because there were some social sensitivities that were left by the wayside.
That is something I think I struggled with in just doing this quiz itself, I do identify with being a very different person at my job and in
me
my personal
too.
Life.
Yeah.
Like, my personalities, to be honest, are like, I almost on some level feel like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, I think sometimes if, like, some people from work of any of my jobs ran into me in a social situation, they wouldn't even think I was the same person. Like, they might think I was drunk even if I was drinking water because I would seem potentially so different.
Yes, and I've actually had a friend, listener, and coworker tell me after we had been working together for a year, like, was the first time we hung out outside of work, like, in a group, and he was like, you know what? I thought you were a real bitch until we hung out outside of work. And I was like, fuck, I really need to examine my at-work behavior. But also,
well, this is everybody's favorite thing. I had several coworkers at one point when I changed teams, like my old team at my current job. A bunch of people described me as quiet.
Ah, yeah, you were obviously
anybody who
being...
knows me socially would be like, no, Austin no. doesn't ever shut up. It's actually maybe an issue.
Well, and I think something about work and the structure of it and that there are, like, usually clear expectations of everyone allows me to maybe be, like, less soft about things than I would in my regular life. Like, at work, there's such a clear, like, do and don't that when, like, someone is, like, really fucking something up but they have all of the resources to fix it, like, I'm less soft about that in a work situation than in, like, an interpersonal situation. And that's probably wrong because in either work or, like, home, someone could have, like, emotional stuff going on that affects how they're, like, currently problem solving. So I should really be better about that.
Well, that to that point, we talked about that a little bit when we did the apology style episode, which actually I just sent to someone else. If you're looking for it, season 1, episode 14.
Thank you.
It's a very interesting thing, and the episode's called Forgive and Forget Me Not. But we talked about this, and you and I were in different camps in that I felt like I could ask and demand greater apologies from people in my interpersonal life than I felt like I could at work.
This is the same thing for me.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I don't care about people at work because, like, that's not really where the value added in my life is, but these interpersonal or, like, familial romantic relationships are really, like, the bread and butter of my existence, so we have to be better to each other. And you felt like, no, I can demand more from people at work because, like, this is work and this is how things are, and interpersonally,
and
like,
it's less emotional. And I think that when I have, like, feelings or emotions about, like, a person or a situation, like, in my non-work life, I am more sensitive to how they feel. I'm more sensitive to, like, how it will play out later, and I'm much more likely to be maybe overly pliable with a friend or a family member or something than I ever would be in a work situation. And it is also because I care more about, like, my home life interactions, but it just shows up
it
opposite.
Manifests different ways. Yeah. We just, like, we treat that differently because of the same values, which is kind of cool. That's just, like, people working differently, and it's fine. And I don't want to derail us from the fourth one that you're going to present, but I do want to circle back on this because something I really noodled on about doing this, like, quiz of sorts and taking the temperaments was that I was like, well, like, should I be thinking about this in a work lens? Should I be thinking about
both.
It in an interpersonal lens? Because I think my answers are really different for both. So,
yeah, me too. And when we get into the breakdown of, like, what variables you're actually being typed on, I think that it will become clear, because it became clear to me once I read about that, like, how I could be different at work than at home, like, seeing it as more of a sliding scale.
Totally. Cool. So what's the fourth and final?
So the fourth and final, and, like, not to be a hater, but, like, we do kind of like to highlight when, like, one type sucks pretty hard.
RIP.
I'm sorry. ESFJs, I like you sometimes, and I'm sorry about what I said in season one. Anyway, the last category is guardians. And apparently, guardians make up, like, almost 80% of the population. And if
really?
You are on the Kiersey's website that I talked about earlier, like, the main website for the Institute,
okay.
There is an article on there about dating guardians and like advice for all the other types on how to date guardians, because they're the bulk of the population, but they're very different from all of the other types.
Wait, so they would categorize idealists, rationalists, and artisans like kind of more like each other?
Not necessarily more like each other, but when we get into the breakdown of what the guardian is, they're kind of like the least flexible type.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But they're also the majority of people. So like society as a whole.
It's kind of weird that you and I, neither one of us tested as that.
I know. And I think you might have a few traits, but you are definitely not primarily this. Okay, so what is a guardian? Guardians,
yeah, what is it?
Tend to be deceit or not deceitful, excuse me.
Wow, I was like, this did take a turn. 80% of the population is deceitful.
Dutiful, excuse me.
Oh, dutiful, okay, cool.
Cautious, humble, and focused on credentials and traditions. This is my grandmother, who loves to go to the post office and curves where she's always gone, and is very into like having a pumpkin tablecloth for Halloween, a Thanksgiving one, a Christmas one, like doing all of these traditions like in a very intense, systemized way, because it makes her feel good. It's her duty to the family. They pride themselves on being dependable, helpful, and hardworking. They make loyal.
These are all positive traits.
Well, yeah, and all of these on the temperaments are positive things. It's a very positive temperament sorter. It doesn't really dig into like the bad side of the types. It's more about like focusing on what the positives are and how to use those things together rather than clashing.
Yeah, I'm just interested because you said this is like 80% of people and you're talking about a type that sucks. So I'm just trying to see where we're going with this.
Okay, well, I'll tell you why I think that after I finish reading it. So
they
make loyal mates, responsible parents, and stabilizing leaders. They are concerned citizens who trust authority, join groups.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Seek security.
That's fine.
And dream of justice playing out. So those are all good things. The hard thing for me about like interacting with guardian types, I feel, is their desire to do things step by step just because that's the way that it's done. So
I do struggle with that mentality for sure.
Right. And there's an adherence to rules and tradition outside of logic. So they are logistical, but not necessarily logical. So, for example, a rational and a guardian might have a disagreement about how something should be done because the rational is going to look at the system, learn and understand the system so that then they can skip steps and get to the same goal in a more efficient way.
I think my dad is irrational.
I think he probably is too. Yeah. And he's an INTJ, right?
Oh, no, my dad identifies as an extrovert.
Oh, I always forget that. All right.
I don't remember the exact letters. Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Anyway, so your dad would probably get frustrated with a guardian type because that person would say, no, 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 Austin's dad, you're doing it wrong. We have to build this in order. And your dad's looking at it and he's like, well, it really doesn't matter if we like sort the papers because they're going to get out of order later anyway. So like we should eliminate that step. But the guardian would be just like adhering to the rules that were laid out.
I think this is why guardians need rationals. And it's actually something I really admire about my dad. I can think of managers and jobs that I've had who seem at times very inflexible about like changing a system because they're very much of the mindset like this is how we've always done it.
So it's what works,
Right. And I think that's something I admire about my dad is very like not committed to doing things the way that maybe somebody said you should if he thinks there's a better way to do it. And he, I will say, like, I think sometimes takes a really long time to complete a project, but literally no one will do it with like a more discerning lens than him. So if you want something done right, have my dad do it.
Yeah.
If you want something done really quick, don't ask him.
That's that's okay. He will do it right though.
Yeah, he will.
Okay, so as I said before, these types do connect to Myers-Briggs. So if you happen to know your Myers-Briggs type, then the little rundown of those is that artisans are typically, although Austin is an outlier, artisans are typically SPs. So if you have an S and a P in your type, you're probably an artisan. Guardians are SJ types. Rationals are NTs. So perhaps your father. And idealists are NFs. But obviously we're using like a little bit of a different ruler than Myers-Briggs would be using. So to explain what that ruler is, I'm going to attempt to explain the temperaments matrix, despite this being an audio platform.
God, I love it. I love explaining visuals on audio.
I don't think it'll be that hard. So the temperaments matrix is what kind of explained to me how Kiersey temperaments differ from Myers-Briggs.
Other
than there being only four types instead of 16.
But, and I also think this is something worth throwing down, though, because with any kind of system, whether we're talking Myers-Briggs, Big Five, we're bringing in other, like, less, you know, psychological things like astrology or this or that. And I think often the way we do it, like, we bring in enneagrams and we'll be like, well, like, this Myers-Briggs goes to this enneagram. And here's the thing. If it really were that simple, we wouldn't have more than one system.
Exactly. And they all measure slightly different things. And it's all just more information to have about yourself. And don't feel dysphoria if your types don't line up. I actually think that's much more interesting and actually gives us more information about who you are than if, like, I think it's fascinating that your type doesn't line up. And I think that it says a lot about where you're going to fall on this temperament matrix.
That's so interesting. I'm excited to talk about it. And I just, again, think it's a reminder to your point, like, all these tools do, and why I love any kind of personality typing thing, be it love languages or Myers-Briggs, is because it gives us a better vocabulary and a better way to determine what our own needs are and how to articulate them in a way that's not argumentative with people we're in relationships with. And at the end of the day, like, Myers-Briggs, a love language, the Big Five, Enneagram, Kiersey, none of it describes, like, who you are as a full person. Just like there's not one religion you're going to agree with everything about. There's not one political party you're going to be like, I identify with every part of this. Like, that, the world doesn't work that way.
But it gives you some language.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I'm kind of excited to maybe identify with both. The idealist and the artisan.
And so I like identifying with multiple too. So the way that the Kiersey website lays out this matrix is they say, so what accounts for the differences we see in the four temperaments? To use the idea of temperament most effectively, it is important to understand that the four temperaments are not simply arbitrary collections of characteristics, but spring from an interaction of the two basic dimensions of human behavior, which they state are our communication and our action. So our words and our deeds, or what we say and what we do.
Oh, I like how simple that is.
Yeah, it's unbelievably simple, and it, like, the descriptions, like, truly blew my mind. And we should probably post a picture of it.
We'll do it. Check the Instagram.
So basically the temperament matrix is like a two axis graph, so like a plus sign, and on the x-axis is communication. And communication can either be concrete or abstract. And then action breaks down into either cooperative or utilitarian. And so,
can I go ahead and say what I think I am based on not knowing in which plane my type falls
into? I love when you ignorantly guess.
I love ignorantly guessing. Well, I would say I make concrete, I think, communicator. Like, if that means what I think it means, like, if you're, like, really straightforward and to the point.
It's concrete versus abstract. So you're choosing concrete for yourself?
I think, well, that's hard because abstract, it's like, this is interesting. I want you to elaborate more on it, because to me, hearing concrete versus abstract in communication style, like, it is the difference between like saying what you mean or like beating around the bush, but also like I guess I could think about it in like abstract being more like analogies and metaphors, and concrete just being like more black and white. And I'm like, I actually really do think I describe things in like a comparative way a lot of the time.
So it's actually not about how you describe things. It's about okay. how you naturally communicate with others and what you like to talk about.
It's what I like to talk about, the abstract.
So, yeah, the way that they break it down is they say concrete communication. Some people talk primarily about the external, concrete world of everyday reality. Facts and figures, work and play, home and family, news, sports, weather, all the who, what, when, where, and how much of life. So,
an abstract is like all the fucking, it's going to be like all the feelings and the introspective crazy people. I'm like, this is me. Cool. I like that I was so wrong about the syntax choices.
That's okay. That's okay. And then just to nail it down, abstract is people who primarily talk about the internal abstract world of ideas, theories and conjectures, dreams and philosophies, beliefs and fantasies. These people could have a conversation with someone who they don't know and learn nothing about the other person, but talk at length for hours because they're talking about like an idea or like creating some kind of
theory, a philosophy.
Yeah, kind of like jiving on theories and philosophies, but almost improvisation. There's more like play going on probably, rather than just running down like this week my sister came over and she has three daughters and then Cynthia took the car and you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think this is me, and I think sometimes I struggle because sometimes I find myself doing this and then I feel like I realize I'm in like a room full of people who are talking about who drove the car.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but how does that make you feel? And like, did you like worry about like this person driving the car?
What's
and, like,
the vibe of the car?
Right. Just like weird. And then I'm like, I think people might think there's something wrong with me. Yeah.
No, but more people are concrete communicators than abstract, and I really struggle with that too, especially in new social environments, specifically new serving jobs. This has been a real tough thing for me, and I think part of why it takes me so long to get to know people in a new job situation is I don't have like a strong desire for a lot of concrete communication, like me telling you what I did today or like something I did this weekend. Like, sure, it's fine, but like unless something crazy happened or like sparked an idea, I don't really want to talk about it and I don't find it interesting. And to listen to other people just give me a rundown of what they did yesterday, like, is fine if it's like a person who I love. Like, I like it when you or my girlfriend like tell me what you did this weekend or yesterday because I understand your life and I can picture that. But with a stranger or someone, like, I don't give any shits. Like, people who just talk your ear off in line at the DMV, I'm like, wow, I'm so glad
couldn't
you got your
care
lottery
less
ticket
about your Caesar couldn't salad. Care less. Like, truly, you know,
couldn't care less. And I don't know, they're not always complainers, but I think a lot of like heavy complainers are sometimes concrete communicators.
Yeah, I feel what you're saying. Yeah, I think sometimes I worry that I can be so abstract in communication that people maybe think that I'm like trying to talk about things that perhaps they find like invasively personal because I'm more interested about the feelings part about it than like what actually happened.
This is a way that our abstraction is different. Go on and then I'll finish.
Yeah, because you don't do this. And I'll be like, no, like I met you 20 minutes ago, but let's like talk about this on a really like cellular deep level. And like sometimes that is how I have made some of my best friends because there are other people who are like that. And then we're just like immediately like one of my best girls in Chicago, she and I, the first time we hung out one-on-one, and this is tequila fueled as well, but we were just like, listen, let me just lay down for you who I am and like the fucking like part of my life that I'm in right now and what's hard. And we both did that and we were like, cool, we're bonded for life now. Mm-hmm. This is where we're at. And like that is a cornerstone of our friendship. But if she was somebody who was like more of a concrete person,
yeah, facts, figures, data,
we wouldn't be friends. And I've totally done that with people who I know are more concrete, people who are like, this girl is weird.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I think so that
it's
have...
not like a hindrance. It's just like a hindrance with certain people. Just like somebody talking to me about concrete things wouldn't appeal to me. And
yes,
they would be
I get
like,
so
there's
bored.
Nothing wrong with this, though. But there's nothing wrong with being that way.
No, nothing at all. But I find it hard to even think of responses in like very concrete conversations with someone I don't know very well.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think that I get maybe looked at sideways for the way that I am abstract, more in like I communicate, I think, too often in metaphors and analogies in a way that probably is like confusing or maybe is annoying to some people who are more concrete. And I've never really thought about that. I've only ever thought about how they are annoying to me, but they're probably like,
oh yeah, no, we're annoying to other people. Like in being abstract, that's what I want to be clear. I'm like, I don't want to sell this like, oh, concrete people are boring. I'm like, no, like I think that I probably seem invasive to people sometimes the way I'm talking, and also like maybe like a little like space cadet-y even.
I think I seem space cadet-y and maybe like a little I don't know, like intellectually
aloof?
Arrogant. Yeah, aloof. Just I'm just an Aquarius, okay?
And I think I seem like almost like frustratingly like in like too in the shit immediately.
Yeah, yeah. You'll go, like focus on like the abstract feelings.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is communication, and
so interesting. I love that. So which ones are which? So the idealist.
So people who use abstract communication are the idealist and the rational.
Artisan?
Nope.
Oh, the rational. Okay.
Yep. And then people who use concrete communication are artisans and guardians.
Okay.
So then
this would be something that would make me definitely be like, oh, I think I'm more of an idealist than an artisan because
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
think I'm in the concrete at all.
Anyway, so the other axis, action.
Yeah.
What are the two types of action? Cooperative and utilitarian. Do you want to ignorantly guess about this?
Yeah, so this one feels maybe easier to me, but again, I could be wrong. Cooperative seems like perhaps in your interactions, your goals are more like about being like a peacekeeper, making sure like everybody feels cool. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the extreme version of utilitarian would be like you're worried about end results and not really worried about what it means for the individual players. So like in a work situation, you would be happy as long as the bottom line was met, but you wouldn't be like worried if that like made Karen feel put out.
Oh, Karen. And I will tell you that I used to not worry if Karen was put out, but we have come a long way and I have been more sensitive and less utilitarian in my communications with Karen, and we are now good friends.
Is this a real person?
This is
Karen?
A real Karen. Hi, Karen.
Oh, Karen! this is actually where, if I like think about this, like this is the area in which I think my work and personal life personas are the most extreme in their differentness. I don't think my communication is that different mm-hmm. or like the way I communicate, but I think I can be very utilitarian at work in a way I would not be at all in my personal life.
Mm-hmm.
And in my personal life, I'm very like focused on how everyone's feeling and the cooperative nature of it
mm-hmm.
and the emotions. And I think I worry sometimes because I'm like that at work that like people who I work with think I'm a bitch.
I worry, but actually I know people think that, and I am for years been trying to overcome it, but I can't seem to. And so maybe it's true, but that's okay. But yeah, I also feel a little bit of a split here. And I think this is the thing that makes me slide down the scale closer to rational, because if we look at the Matrix, the people who use utilitarian communication are rationals and artisans.
Okay.
And so a rational uses abstract communication and utilitarian action, but an idealist, which is what you and I are, uses also abstract communication, but cooperative action. And so it's same communication, different action style. And so I personally feel kind of split between cooperative and utilitarian action, like the group versus the bottom line or the end goal. And so
I feel split about that just in my work versus personal life, but not like in my like whole personness. I would say whole personness, I'm probably more cooperative, but to a fault, in the sense that actually the person whose feelings I'm probably like too heavily worried about are mm-hmm. my own and not other people's.
Oh.
This is like me being very sensitive.
But that could actually keep you cooperative because it's almost like you would feel negatively if other people were upset with you.
Oh, yes, because my greatest fear
and
is
so
that
there's
no one
social
likes
accountability
me.
There yeah. that keeps you cooperative.
Yeah, because I want everyone to like me in a way that's irrational. And so
it's an ideal of yours.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so, like, it does make me want to not piss anybody off, but I don't function in the everybody needs to like me sphere at work the same way I do in my personal life. At work, yeah. I'm kind of okay if people don't really like me.
I am more okay with it at work. I think, actually, it would be devastating if I received the same feedback in my, like, friendships as I did at work.
Mm. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of how we feel about ourselves and what we value, Kiersey also breaks down the self-image of the four temperaments. So,
okay. Oh, interesting. Okay.
So he observed that people have different core pursuits based on their temperament. Each of the four mm-hmm. temperaments take different paths to self-esteem. So in other words, based on a person's temperament, they will be driven differently and they will feel the best about themselves when they are a certain way or achieving certain things that matter to them.
Okay.
So I am going to read this list and you can tell me which ones you identify with.
Okay. Is it like a this or that kind of thing?
It could be.
Okay. All right. Are you just going to give me a word and I'm going to say yes or no?
Yeah, because I wondered okay. if you would, without being prompted that these are like supposed to be for you, if you would agree with like these values.
Okay, go ahead. Hit me with them and I'll give you yes or no's.
Okay, so do you think that you are most into reliability, service, and respectability? Artistic action, audacity, and adaptability?
That one.
Ingenuity, autonomy, and willpower, or empathy, benevolence, and authenticity.
I feel like the adaptable one, like the second one.
Yep, so that's for the artisan. So that's yeah. fun. Yep.
Which one's for the idealist?
The one that's for the idealist, which is what we both are, is empathy, benevolence, and authenticity.
Can I say, I have a hard time with any personality typing that says like, are you benevolent or kind? Because I feel like it's arrogant to say that you are.
It kind of is. An idealist yeah. would answer that it's arrogant to say that you are, probably.
I mean, I just like, I really steer away from those because I don't feel like I'm qualified to make that kind of character assessment on myself.
That's probably good. I don't know that any of us should. Once you start labeling yourself benevolent, that's...
Right? That just seems a little egomaniacal.
Yeah, there's
I'm benevolent.
An elevatedness. There's like a condescension to saying that you are benevolent.
I think so.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, I don't super agree with these values either, although I would like to think that I live my life in an empathetic and authentic way.
For the guardians and the rationalists listening, which set of words are theirs?
Guardian is reliable, service-oriented, respectability.
Got it. That yeah. checks out.
Just trying to be a good member of society over there. And then the rationals are ingenuity, autonomy, and willpower.
That checks out as well.
Yeah. And I identify with some of those. Although my willpower okay. is low, I value it and wish it was higher. I think I'd be happier if it was higher.
Mm.
I don't know.
I think my willpower is pretty high, but I don't think I often like credit myself with that.
Yeah.
I make a lot of shit happen for myself, which feels
you
like a,
sure
like
do,
arrogant
actually.
As fuck thing to say, but.
No, that's okay. And that's the utilitarian action side of you making shit happen.
I just feel like I trust myself to like figure my way out of a hole often.
Do I? Maybe I do.
I don't know. You, I feel like, worry that you'll never be able to write things. And I'm always the person, or you'll worry that you're going to be like devastated in some way or be like homeless or like not have money.
I do have an impending sense of doom. Yes,
you do. I mean, I'm not saying that in a shitty way. Like you just do.
No, it just is. Yeah.
But in a way that also is negative, I sometimes don't worry about those things in a way that can be detrimental because I just am always very confident that I'll, quote unquote, figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
And I can be reckless for that reason.
Mm. But I always do figure it out. So maybe I would save myself a whole lot of anxiety and headache by just believing that everything would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, you figure shit out better than most people I know.
Thank you. And maybe.
But you also don't trust your ability to figure shit out more than most people I know.
I do not. And maybe you've been chaos magicking your way to just like always being fine no matter what, because you tell yourself that and you believe it and you manifest it. And so maybe.
Guys, maybe this is chaos magic. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it is. Anyway, we cannot derail on chaos magic, even though I would love to. We truly can't.
That actually is an entire other episode.
It's another podcast. I'm just going to go ahead and say.
It is, but we do have a singular episode where we touch it a little bit.
We do actually, though, have an episode about it if you wanted to go back into the Spooktober part of this season.
Anyway.
So what do we do with all of this? This system is, I don't know, less in-depth, less touchy-feely than some of the other systems that we've covered. It doesn't deal so much with negative elements of personality and is truly so, so simple. I've never thought about human beings just exclusively through the lens of how they communicate and how they act. But
yeah, I like the simplicity of that, and I like kind of the visual of just like an axis, and we're kind of running this way. And also when we graph things that way, you know, it's a scatter plot. Nobody's like all the way on both poles, you know?
Right. And even though you have a quadrant, it is easy, especially with the Matrix, to look at it and say, oh, I could see that I'm probably sliding maybe toward the cusp of being rational.
Sure, sure. I guess I also like have takeaways with it that I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm intrigued by this, or I'm learning something about it. Because I think, again, like any type that we've talked about, it does give me some better ways to think about how other, not only how I interact with people, but also how other people are interacting with me. And maybe some
that was
things,
a takeaway for me as well.
Yeah. Like talking about the concrete, I think sometimes I think that people who live more in that space than me, and this is an arrogant thing to say, are like more superficial than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about it in this lens also helps me understand that that's not what's going on.
Yeah, no, and that was perhaps humbling for me, because admittedly, I think that I would probably, before researching this at kind of the beginning, have said that I thought that abstract communication was superior to concrete communication.
I think that I have thought that too. And there are like, I think some shitty sayings out there that help facilitate maybe feeling holier than thou about that.
For
sure. In the sense where people say like, oh, like, you know, dumb people talk about like other people, and like smart people talk about like ideas or mm-hmm. something. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. There's some kind of version of that that I do think maybe does us an injustice, just as like people connecting with other people.
It does indeed. Although I would say to that point that a concrete communicator is probably more likely to engage in gossip than an abstract communicator, but that abstract communicator might create a whole bunch of really hurtful lies. So two sides, you know?
Yeah, you can be shitty in both categories is what
you
we're saying.
Sure can. You sure can.
And the goal is to just not be shitty. Yeah.
Yeah. And someone who is now I can't even remember the freaking word. More cooperative. There it is. Someone who's more cooperative in their action rather than utilitarian could also be a little shit in their cooperative way. Like they would be more sensitive to how people feel and interact with each other. And that if you have intelligence about that, you can use it against other people.
But also, if you're an extreme pleaser, you may not be getting your own emotional needs met. And also, like, I think it's really easy to think about it in the context of business or work, but without some utilitarianness, like, nothing gets accomplished. And that could be, like, it's easy to say that in business, but, like, that can also affect how we do things interpersonally in relationships. And if you're always worried about just like how everybody feels, you may not grow and develop at the same
rate. It's a snail's pace.
Yeah. And so like I think like the takeaway is like you need to be somewhere in between the hyperbolic I'm only cooperative and the I'm only utilitarian.
Right. And we all have a quadrant that we naturally gravitate toward on this matrix. But
sure.
Something important that I think should be a big takeaway is that, like with any typing system, but especially with this one, it is important to try to integrate all of the quadrants into yourself. So yes, we are idealists, but it is important for me to learn how to have better concrete communication with people who naturally bend that way. And it is important for me to develop a good balance between utilitarian action and cooperative action. And that's a place where I feel a lot of struggle, especially at work, is finding the balance between cooperative and utilitarian. But just trying to bring all of these pieces together, it makes you like a more rounded person. It makes you sensitive to others.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was in like a managerial role at times, I think I always felt so much pressure from whoever was managing me that the people I wasn't managing like didn't see that pressure. Mm-hmm. And then I think I like could sometimes seem like a crazy asshole tyrant. Perhaps, I guess, in my shoes, I felt like people didn't understand what was being put on me. But then I felt like because of that pressure, it was really on me to, you know, not be everyone's friend and make whatever X, Y, and Z shit happen in a way that was very, at times, uncooperative.
Yeah. And I definitely, yes, do the like similar things in like, I feel like project scenarios, I don't know. There's like a lot of group projects in college that I have feelings about like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And yeah, somebody's definitely. Just got to push hard, get it done.
Well, I'll say right now, my present manager at work is truly the best person I've ever been managed by in my life. Mm-hmm. I really That's mean great. That, which is really cool. But she, shout out to ladies managing, mm-hmm. But she... I think one of the things I admire the most about her is how she straddles cooperative and utilitarian. And I've watched her have like a much longer fuse than I feel like I had as a manager at times for like what I, in my own head, in a non-respectful way, would dub like stupid, yeah. like the way other people yeah. were thinking or acting, which right. is not fair. And she's very good at that. And I feel like I like have some takeaways from that I'm like, oh, like that is how you balance that in a work situation, which is not something that comes easy to me.
No, me either. And like you're in retail and I am still in restaurant situation. And the restaurant that I work at has done kind of a company overhaul recently where... Not in this language that we're using tonight, but honestly has flipped from valuing utilitarian communication to valuing mostly cooperative or action. I'm sorry, to being mostly cooperative. And that for people who are more like old school in the company has been a really difficult uphill battle because restaurant culture is like as few Get words as we can say to like
yeah.
communicate this, like, it doesn't matter if you're short with people, like you can yell if you need to, like
literally heard.
Yeah. Heard that. But it's been, yeah. So it's been tough for me to adjust because so many of the ways that I would normally interact or communicate during a shift are now unacceptable. And so I am finding myself, like you described, like watching my managers who, because there's more at stake for them probably, like do a better job than I am doing at switching their action style. And obviously because we have like time goals, we're a restaurant, like people have to get food at a certain time, we have to keep the wait list like how it's supposed to be. There are utilitarian things that need to happen, but the way that we go about it with other staff members has to be cooperative, and it can't make anyone like feel bad, it can't have like a harsh sound to it at all. And so like that's been a huge adjustment, but I am trying to learn that valuing how people feel while you're all getting a job done together doesn't actually slow you down as much as I feel like it slows you down. So trying to see like that maybe by being super utilitarian in my actions, like and maybe irritating some other people, I'm not actually getting it done that much faster.
Mm, and if anything, you might be like clogging the pipeline later
because I'm upsetting other people.
Upsetting people. Yeah.
Right. And then there's a 17-year-old who I've made cry, and now like she can't see the door because she's in the bathroom, and like I didn't need to do that. Anyway, enough about me.
I love you. I mean, there's something to that though. So do you feel like this kind of cultural shift is positive, even though it's hard?
It is, I think, mostly positive. And we are, they are, everyone is trying really hard, I think, to find a balance. And I think that it's maybe gone too far to the way of being soft in so much that I think it's like affecting people's training. Like they're not being like corrected when they should be. And so we're all kind of trying to learn together how to correct someone like in a gentle way.
Because you have to. You have to do things the right way, but you don't have
you
to
do.
Be rude about it.
Yeah. And so like trying to zero in on like, okay, what are the things that make this communication upsetting? Like if we have to tell someone that they did something wrong, like what are the ways that we can say that that won't make them feel awful?
Yeah.
And so,
so important.
The balance is hard, but I'll let you know when we get there.
I love that. And my, like that's something, I mean, like outside of like workplace stuff, it is, I think, something good to think about just like interpersonally.
Oh, yeah.
And like for me, I don't know, it's like maybe a reminder to like not be so caught up in my own feelings. I don't know.
I find myself very unaware of like when I'm in my feelings, like how I am communicating. Like I'm aware of what I'm saying, but we constantly at work like talk about 7:45, 7:48, and that's like the breakdown of like 7% of like your communication is what you say, 45% is how you look when you're saying it, like your expression in your body, and then 48% is your tone. And so like
that's
trying to
so
constantly
real.
Balance that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to like, you know, defend the psychology that I don't know about how we got these exact percentages, but I do think
and they're not,
that
there are some numbers, like anytime we give a percentage or a,
right.
a fact with numbers, just like take the ballpark fraction because
yeah,
we don't and any of us really know.
That's true. But I do really, I'm like, yeah, it's really at the end of the day, it's like not what you say as much as, and this is coming from somebody who values words so deeply. It's like how you say it and the way you are, like your demeanor, et cetera, when you say it the way that you say it. Yeah, that's
exactly.
huge, actually. That's
yeah.
a good thing to be reminded of.
Oh, yeah. And especially like in service industry, remembering that helps me make money.
Yeah, truly.
Truly. But anyway, back to Kirsey stuff. The last thing that I really wanted to ask you, and you may not have an answer for me on this, but
okay.
reading about the communication stuff this week, the concrete versus abstract, really made me think about all of the like just kind of awkward, uncomfortable conversations that I've had with people like while I'm waiting to get my oil changed or like at a friend's birthday party when I'm like sitting next to their high school best friend who I've never met before. Like
right.
most people are concrete communicators. And so I
okay.
often find myself in situations with a concrete communicator who I have to talk to for a while, but I don't really know anything about them to build on. And I just like, how can I be better at chatting with them? Like, I want them to think that I'm interesting and I want to be able to participate in the conversation better. And I know you probably don't have an answer, but I feel like you are someone who is more able to instantly converse with any number of people.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I guess it is something that I do also feel like is maybe like a strength of mine, for better or for worse.
And I feel like you slide on the communication axis easier than I do.
Maybe, yeah, I could feel that. I'd say, like, there's some middle ground to me between, like, abstract and concrete. So let's say that I'm at this birthday party sitting next to, like, this person's friend who I don't really know.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, I mean, I want to talk about, like, just, like, weird theories and, like, feelings and psychology and, like, whatever.
That's what I want to be talking about, yes.
Yeah. And like, I also have like the things up my arsenal that like I talk to people about that just like happen to be something I'm interested in that doesn't work with everybody, but works with some people. So mm-hmm. like you've seen me talk like ad nauseum about basketball with anybody at like any given time, because it's something
that is a concrete thing though.
That's what I'm saying. It's a concrete thing that I have up my sleeve. And so I think everybody has a couple concrete things up their sleeves.
What are my little knowledgeable areas?
Yeah, like just think about the things that like you like that, you know, somebody else might like. And when I know somebody else likes one of the concrete things I like, I'll totally talk to them about it.
I talk with older bar guests a lot about like 70s music. And this is the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and so that's a more concrete thing. But then the other thing that to me straddles the line between concrete and abstract mm-hmm. that like touches my desire to talk about interpersonal relationships
yeah.
and touches other people's desire maybe to talk about like factual things that
have happened. Yeah.
So when you're next to this person at the birthday who you don't really know, I usually like to be like, how do you know this person? And like, what were they like then? And like,
yeah,
what do you
that
guys
is the
do?
Right move, and because I also want to know about that, and that does straddle the line, because they are telling me a concrete answer, but I am imagining this other version of a person who I know now but didn't know then. So this mm-hmm. gets to be like, that's great, because it gets to be concrete for them and it gets to be mm-hmm. abstract fun for me.
Yeah, I think there's something like, for me, if I can talk like concretely about other people in like a non-gossipy way, like I'll say one of my best guys, his fiance last year had, or I guess, well, it's almost 2020, but shout out to the New Year's. But so in February of 2019, right?
Yeah.
They hosted a like a Galentine's Day like dinner thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anyone but her. I was super touched she included me and invited me. And she invited a really fun mixed bag of women. It was people she worked with presently, people she used to work with, people she knew from college, and then, me,
and
her fiance's, like, homie. And it was really fun, because at some point, and we kind of self-instigated this in Chicago, a bunch of different neighborhoods, so everybody got talking, and we were like, well, everybody was like, what neighborhood do you live in? Which I feel like in this city, you kind of feel like you maybe get some sense of a person just based on that. Mm-hmm. I think in any city.
Any
it's like,
city,
where did
truly.
You choose to be?
And everyone and here asks where you went to high school.
Yeah, that's a Cincinnati thing for sure. But then the other thing is, everybody was like, well, how do you know this woman who's hosting? And so people were like, oh, well, we work together now. Or people were like, oh, we did our MBA together. And I was like, oh, well, I'm really good friends with her and her fiance from college. Mm-hmm. And people immediately like pounced on it. And they were like, oh my God, what was she like in college?
Exactly.
Tell me everything. And it was really fun.
Everyone wants to know about that. Everyone.
Yeah. And so we were talking abstract and concrete kind of in that situation, because we were talking about people we had in common.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another like this is more of like an icebreaker thing, but I was just thinking, you know, the game at parties or like sometimes corporate events, it's not very fun, but I think it works really well.
Okay.
Where they put the name of a celebrity on your back and you have to like mill around and figure out who you are by asking
people. Oh, yeah, it's on
your forehead. Yeah.
I love that game, actually.
I feel fine about it, but I think the reason it's so successful as an icebreaker is because it combines those two styles of communication.
Mm.
And you can communicate either way in that game. You can communicate abstractly or concretely and really kind of mm-hmm. get the same result. And not have that be inhibiting for people. And it's something to talk about that's like not personal, but also shows like how you problem solve, which is always fun.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's just a fun game. And also what's fun about that game is it's not usually like a game where people win or lose. It's kind of like,
yeah, everyone's just
nobody's
figuring
always
it
like
out.
First one to figure it out, because it's kind of like a joint effort based on things other people are saying to you, kind of like heads up.
Right. You could make someone lose easily.
I mean, you could, and then you'd be kind of an asshole. But,
you would
you know,
be.
Whatever.
You would be uncooperative. Yeah.
I like what you're saying. You would be uncooperative. You'd be, but you also wouldn't be utilitarian, would you?
Not really. No. You'd just be an outlier.
That's a That game is a great example because you kind of have to be like cooperative, utilitarian, abstract, and concrete for yes. there to be success.
You need everything. Yeah.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Well, I guess that's the takeaway. And you have talked about using this in a work scenario. And I guess I'm kind of, I guess that's a question I have is, how do you feel like everybody's utilized? Like, what do we do with this information once we know who's what way?
I feel like for me, it makes people, it makes me more aware of what other people value and how they operate and communicate. So like the example earlier that I gave about like, if your dad was problem solving with a guardian type, so we have a rational and a guardian, and
specifically my father. Yes, yes.
Specifically okay. your father. And they are like under pressure trying to get like something finished that mm-hmm. has to do with like documents that have a system or whatever. Your father, the rational, as I said, is gonna need to understand that he has to be careful with how far he pushes the guardian into doing things out of order, because the guardian's gonna get upset about doing things out of order or not following the rules, or the guardian may become like overly stressed out about like, if we don't do it correctly, like maybe it won't even work, or like maybe this won't count. And so being aware of what other people value and how they think about communication, problem solving, group dynamics, just being aware that people value different things than you. So like for me at work, it means like remembering that like I really value efficiency, but like I should not allow that to blind me to the fact that for probably half of my coworkers, the social elements of working are far more important. And so to me, I feel like it's eye opening, and I'm trying to learn how to value what other people bring to the table, because I don't know. And I feel like maybe New Year's resolution for me should be that I should lean into being like my authentic idealist self, you know, like maybe I need to stop trying to be irrational, because like I do care about community and humanity, and I don't want to be like a utilitarian asshole at work or in my regular life. And so I don't know. I guess how do we use it is we learn to like value and respect what other people bring to the table.
I like you saying this. I think there's something here outside of work that comes to mind, and just like a true like 20s, 30s problem. And also I think like generationally for us, maybe more so than older generations, in that we are a generation where I feel like I have some friends who are maybe following that guardianship of like, this is when you get married, and this is when you have babies, and this is how you do your career. But that's
80% of people.
Sure. And then I feel not on that trajectory, and I feel both judged by them at times, but I also feel like I'm judging them.
And so can we.
I'm saying like, both people are maybe judging each other a little bit.
Probably.
And maybe it's like okay to acknowledge that, It's not okay to feel judged, but it is okay for people to, you know, follow the order of quote unquote operations or to not.
Yeah. If it makes you feel safe, do it. If it makes you frustrated, don't do it.
Yeah, totally. And I guess I sometimes, in a way that, again, might be a little holier than thou, judge people who I think are doing things just because it's like the next thing you're supposed to do.
So do I.
Maybe I should have a little bit more grace, but I think some of that is because I feel insecure that people are looking at me and saying she's not doing what she's supposed to.
So do I, which is an interesting kind of dichotomy within me, because I really, on the one hand, don't care at all, but then also feel like a lot of pressure to be like, quote, further in my life.
Sure, totally. Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any questions, comments, concerns about Kiersey's temperaments?
I feel like I voiced them. Yeah.
I feel that we both did. This has felt very thorough.
I liked this. I liked this typing system. It was one I really wasn't familiar with, other than like you mentioned.
It's very simple.
I think it's
amazing how simple it is.
Yeah, and it's like it's binary, but it, in terms of like these but are scatter like communication plot. Styles. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It's binary in like our choices, but it's like not binary in our categorization, because I feel like at least the way we have talked about it is that nobody's like all utilitarian or all cooperation.
No, and you're going to slide around on the chart through your life.
Yeah, and in different scenarios at any given day. Like, you could be one way at work that day and be a different way that night socially and vice versa. And I think, you know, the objective is
stress
to
all different
be
times.
Less of an asshole every day.
It is.
So.
That is my objective.
And I think I have some takeaways from this that perhaps would help me be less of an asshole.
Me too. I really do, honestly.
Yeah. I like this. I like this a lot, actually. It makes me feel a little bit, more humbled about, you know, maybe thinking I'm, quote unquote, doing things a better way than other people.
I am checking my judgments. Yeah.
Yeah, I ought to check it. And then also, you know, maybe how I can better, cooperate, or how I can better integrate parts of my personality into other parts of my life that I do think would serve me. So that's kind of cool.
Me too. So in true Why Are You Like This fashion, we have to rap in a verbal game.
Always.
So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
So tonight I have a couple of would you rathers for you. So
sure.
Here's the scenario. You must be an ice road trucker. So this can be a very difficult, sort of long, isolated situation where you have to keep a truck from sliding off the road while you deliver your goods.
Yeah, this would be hard for me.
This would be hard. But you get a buddy. So you get a buddy to do your ice road trucking with. And this journey is going to take about 3 months. There's going to be a lot of problem solving, a lot of time alone in the truck together. And also, at hotels, every time you eat, you are together.
Okay.
Would you like to spend your time as a 6-month ice trucker with a rational or a guardian?
Okay. I want to, in answering this, I want to confirm that the rational is abstract and utilitarian, right?
Yep. Abstract communication, utilitarian action. This is a strategist person, maybe without a lot of feeling.
Okay. And then the guardian is concrete and cooperative.
Correct. So this is the person who plays by the rules, is going to do things in order, will always change the truck tire exactly the correct way. This is that person.
I actually think, perhaps this could surprise, but I don't know. Opposites attract to me. I want the rational.
Yeah?
Yeah. I feel, really affirmed if it's somebody who can talk abstractly with me, my external processor, so I need that. Mm-hmm. And then I definitely would like a buddy who's, about logic and problem solving and creative solutions, both as a work partner, but also in a life partnery way. And if these are my choices, I'm going to choose the headier talker who's not so worried about convention. That feels actually great to me. And that, I think even if you gave me idealist and the artisan in this as well, I think I might still want the rational.
Yeah. Hmm. All right.
What about you? What would you do?
Rational is my top pick, I think. I think I would most like to be on this journey with either another idealist or a rational, because for me, comfortability, socially, is so dependent on, being able to communicate in an abstract way, being able to talk about ideas and just, come up with dumb scenarios together.
Yeah.
Talk conspiracy theory bullshit.
Yeah.
And then also like problem solve the hell out of issues that we have. And I feel like the rational might be, I don't know, grounded in a way that I'm not necessarily. I might get caught in my emotions as maybe a more cooperative doer. Whereas the utilitarian person may be a little more clear headed if, for example, the back tires of our truck slide off into a lake.
Yeah, I think I would appreciate the benefits of having somebody who was perhaps more utilitarian than me in an ice trucking way.
Yeah,
for sure, because I think I could let my emotions get the better of me.
And also, if it's between rational or guardian, I feel like if the back tires slide into a lake, the rational is problem solving, like how to get us the hell out of that situation right now. And the Guardian is like calling the 800 number, like for the company that we work for.
Yeah, and I don't want an 800 number caller. I want somebody who's like, we got this.
We're like actively sinking. And they're like, so now we'll be transferred.
I'm like, no. I'm like, I need somebody who's like, grab this piece of plywood and this chewing gum. I'm MacGyver.
Exactly. You know? And maybe we ruin the truck and there's like a penalty, but like we are alive and it's okay. That's what I feel like would happen. And we're in it together. And then we get to chat for a long time on the way home.
Yeah, the Rational, man. Shout out to the Rationals.
Yeah, I like you guys.
Shout out to my dad. Okay.
And also to us, the Idealists.
Oh, yeah.
But like hey, that. Artisans and Guardians, there's space for you too. Guardians especially, you're most of the world. So take comfort in knowing that you, of all people, are the least alone.
That's nice.
You know, it can be. But we would love to know how you feel about your type or other types. If there's someone that you really dislike, if you think everything that we said was bullshit, we also want to know that. So please get at us on the internet this week and during our between season hiatus. We'd love to still be talking.
We're going to miss you for a couple weeks, which means you've got time to catch up on stuff. If you haven't, we'll still be like out here in the universe, but we're taking our annual, and by annual I mean biannual, little season breakaroo, you know.
Little break, we got to. And so get at us in this hiatus on the internet, and where can they do that?
In this little hiatus, and always, you can reach us via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod or on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And I don't know, I hope you stay in touch. If there's anything you're like pretty keen in hearing us talk about in season four, remember that we're always open to suggestions. And
we love it. It's truly less work for us.
I mean, truly, yeah, truly. To do our jobs. Okay. But that said, let us know. And we're excited to come back to you with a new season, a new opening montage.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully some more hot takes.
Yeah, maybe some continued personality juju. We'll see. But rate and review us in this time. We would love that. It really helps people understand what the show is. So that's super helpful. But anyway, we love you very much. And I don't think I've ever said that before. But Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Jamie loves you.
I do.
We both love you.
Love you. Oh, and you do get one more episode this season. I lied. You'll get an astrology dealio on Thursday.
Yeah, horoscopes coming at you as per usual. And after that, we'll see you sometime in the new year.
Yes, may old acquaintance be forgot. And good night.
Toodles.